And I thank everybody again for helping us open the meeting with some readings. And I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. And particular welcome to any visitors to our meeting tonight, and a huge welcome to any newcomers to our meeting this evening. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So yeah, we are a speaker meeting tonight, and I am absolutely delighted to introduce our speaker today. This is a person who kind of taught me everything I know, everything I needed to know about chairing and being involved in virtual meetings many years ago. And I have a great deal of respect for this individual, for the service that she's done and the services she continues to do to virtual meetings around the world. She just recently celebrated a pretty major milestone in recovery, and I'm sure she will share about that if she chooses to. But yeah, so Judy is going to share her experience, strength, and hope with us for 40, 45 minutes, how she got here, what it was like, and why she stays. And Judy, the floor is yours. Please share with us. Thank you.
My family, my
Thanks,
name is
Steve.
Thanks,
My family,
Steve.
my name is Judy, and I am an addict.
Hi,
Hi,
Judy.
Judy.
Hi,
Judy.
Hello.
Hello, welcome. I think I know
Judy,
some of y'all.
welcome.
I wanted to share with you. Yesterday, I celebrated 23 years clean, and I tell you what, I never in my wildest dreams ever thought. And stuff. I started using. When I was my mom, I had a family and stuff here in Tampa, and I used to get bullied in high school, and I used to always feel, or I used to get, bullied in junior high school and stuff, and I've always felt like a spaceship came and dropped me off and took who I was supposed to have been, took me off. Never felt like I belonged any place at all. Stuff, and my mom, I was overweight. And I got bullied in school, and dropped water balloons dropped on your head, insulted, fatty. So my mother talked to my doctor, and I was 12 years old at the time, and he put me on diet pills. And they didn't know it, they didn't know. Well, they didn't know anything about addiction back then. And every day at 12 o'clock, my mother would give me a pill, and soon I became looking forward to 12 o'clock to get that pill, and the race was on. I spent the next 34 years of my life in active addiction and stuff. For years, I thought I was a functioning addict. I had my own business, and I had my own grooming business. I had my own home in the country. I had three bank accounts. I had my own truck, and I was a dog groomer. I had my own grooming business. I had a boarding kennel, and I raised poodles and shih tzus and stuff like that. And those dogs and my customers were my whole life until in 1981, I took my first hit of crack. And I lost all of that within 6 months. And most importantly, I lost who I was before I took that first drug. And for the next 17 years, I was lost. In active addiction. I lived on the streets in my city. I was a prostitute. I lived in candlelit crack houses. I sold drugs. I did whatever it took to get my next hit. No matter what it was, that's what I did and stuff. And I've had some pretty, and my sponsor told me it's a pure ass miracle that I lived long enough to make it out of active addiction, because people around me were dying. I got into so many incidents where that could have killed me and stuff. I remember the time I met some guy and stuff, and we were in a drug house in a bad part of my city, and I had a heart attack and I died on the floor of a crack house. Now most of you know what would happen. Most addicts would say, "Oh, hell with you, throw him out in the street or whatever." And I believe my higher power first revealed himself to me that day when an addict stopped using and gave me CPR and called 911 and got me in the ambulance. And they told my mother my blood had boiled because I had smoked about $4,000 worth of crack in one night and stuff. And while I was at the hospital and I didn't get back home, I had all my dogs and stuff died. I lost all my beloved animals and stuff. Most some of them weren't mine and stuff because I was in the hospital and stuff recovering. And by the time I got back home, it was too late because I'm in Florida and it's extremely hot here during the summer. I had pulled my air conditioner out of the wall and sold it for a few hits of crack. That's the kind of addict I was and stuff back then. I'm gonna give you a couple more incidents. I don't like, living there too much. A lot of incidents and stuff where the guy was going out would set me up, and they had and I got robbed. They took my vehicle. They took all my money. My customers' checks I had on me. I was able to get those replaced, and they had me on my hands and knees with a sawed-off shotgun to the back of my head. They were getting ready to execute me, and right before he pulled the trigger, the police ran in. So these are, I'm seeing all these things coming up where my life was saved right at the last minute and stuff. And I went on and stuff, and I got caught. I got busted. A prostitute brought an undercover cop in my house, and he gave me a marked $5 bill to pay for the room. And when they came out, the police raided my house. And I had pneumonia, and I was laying on the couch, and I had thrown the money in the couch, and they found the marked $5 bill. They found the crack I had, about a $5 hit, and the paraphernalia. And I got four felony charges, deriving income from prostitutes, running a house of prostitution, about a $10 piece of crack, and the paraphernalia, because everything was in my name. I caught all the charges and stuff. And I remember going to, I was in jail and stuff for a while and stuff. And my mom had already determined she wasn't going to accept any phone calls from me from jail. So there was no way and stuff, I could get out of jail and stuff. And I remember I felt like I was going to die up in there. They had me in a little dingy, it looked like a dungeon type of a jail cell. It was on the medical ward and stuff. And it was so cold in there. And they would take me out like a couple times a day, and they didn't want to wait for me to get an IV. So they would like push all just the IV solution, push it up in my veins, and give me breathing treatments and overdose me on the breathing treatments. And finally, somebody was able to get a hold of my mother and stuff, and they came and bonded me out of jail and stuff. But that was an incident after incident that I cannot believe that I lived through. Because I'm a survivor. I survived all that mess and all that madness and stuff. So, and being as I was going to court and all that stuff, I was on probation. My probation officer, well, I acted like a real asshole and stuff. He would send me to all these treatment centers, and I would go, and I'd get high in the parking lot, and I'd go in, "You can save your drug test. I just got high in your parking lot." And that's the kind of addict I was and stuff, And finally, in January of 1998, my mother was had told me and stuff that the U.S. Marshals came over here twice to her house looking for me from my four, because I didn't show up to court. It took the canteen money she gave me and went and got high with it and stuff. My mother paid all this money for this attorney and stuff, and I just whoops, skipped out on court, took the canteen money my mom gave me, and went and got high. And so, because that's who I was at that time. And she told me that the U.S. Marshals came over here twice in 1 week. She was so embarrassed, looking underneath beds and in closets and looking for me. My mom was totally embarrassed. And she told me, "Till you get some help for your problems and you get clean, you're dead to me. I don't want you. If you come back and knock on the door, I'm going to have you arrested for trespassing. Don't call here. All the money is cut off," because she used to pay my rent and give me money and buy me food and stuff like that. And he told me, and so I went out and stayed in the drug house for another month and stuff, And I lost 25 pounds in 1 month. I was eating once a week, barely drinking any water, running back and forth to the payphone to beat the dope man and stuff, And finally, it got to the point where they told me, after my mom told me what she told me, I found out the police had a roadblock for me, looking for me out there, and they had contacted Social Security to turn off my Social Security check. And after hitting bottom after bottom after bottom after bottom for years, I finally was able to hit my final bottom. But see, I got gotten so sick and tired of being sick and tired of living the life of an addict in active addiction. And so if I had cut my wrist and took an overdose, and again, my higher power showed up and saved my life. And I woke up the next day and I was okay. And my best friend came and got me, took me out to Denny's to go eat because I was starving. You know, don't eat very much. And I remember on my way out the door, February 5th, 1998, I threw all that drug paraphernalia in the bushes. And I have not ever had to pick back up again. And when I got to jail, I turned myself in on my warrant. I went with a shower and clean clothes. They'd never seen me all clean and stuff because they used to catch me down off the streets, you know, all the time, you know, and the prostitution stings and stuff. I have been to jail 72 times. I have been in the mental institution and I have died. So the promises of active addiction are jails, institutions, and death. I did all three, and yet I lived through them. And I remember going to jail, and I was so exhausted. I must have slept for days. They couldn't hardly wake me up to get me to eat. But they let me go through drug court and stuff, and I'll never forget it because this is the moment that my life was saved. I was in an orange jumpsuit with my hands in handcuffs. They had my legs shackled. And this man walked in. And he was all dressed up, all these gold chains. I said, well, he must be an attorney. Come to find out, he was a member of my soon-to-be local fellowship, a member of H&I in my area, who was also a drug court speaker. And when he shared that he jumped off a bridge to avoid paying the dope man, I got that ID I needed. That's why when I share every meetings, I have to give the newcomer a little look of who I was in active addiction so maybe they can get some identification. And he encouraged us to accept drug court, which I did. I accepted drug court. I went through drug court. My drug court judge was also in recovery. They waived all of my fees. And I did 30 days in jail. And I remember when I came out of jail and stuff, I had a choice. My mother accepted me back in her life when I was 30 days clean, fresh out of a jail cell. When they let me out of jail, I had a choice. I could either get in that cab and come over here, or I could get and go back out to the drug area. I made the choice I made is why I'm sitting here today. It hasn't been easy. It was extremely hard to have to go through all that stuff. They had me on months of house arrest. I had a house arrest officer who told me one of the most profound things I've ever heard been told in my life. He said, "Aren't you a little old for all of this stuff?" And I was. I was clean. I got clean when I was 46 years old, and I was old and stuff, running the streets with the teenagers and doing whatever it took so I could get my next drug of choice. And that was such a profound statement. They had me go to meetings, but they wouldn't let me go to NA yet. They made me go to the other fellowship for 6 months. I hated that stuff because they didn't want me there. They didn't want any addicts there. And I saw many addicts run out the door to never come back again. I stayed and took that abuse and stuff because they minced no words. We don't want to hear anything about any drugs or addiction. This is AA. We only want to hear about alcoholism, you know? And they gave me a real hard time, but I had to be there because my house arrest officer, that's the meeting he sent me to. And I had to go every day. I had to be in a meeting. And I went to intensive outpatient drug treatment. I rode 6 buses a day to go to treatment. It was, and I made a little rhyme about it. It was intensive outpatient drug treatment for us, always relapse and violating probation on the way to prison, kind of an addict, because they told me if you use again ever, you're going to prison for 3 years, Florida State Women's Prison and stuff, you know. And it was very hard. And I'm the only person that's still left alive that graduated from that treatment center. Jails, institutions, and death. That's where all of them ended up. Jails, institutions, and death. I'm the only one out of my treatment program that made it out alive. And that was very, very hard doing all that stuff. It's hard getting used to being in with all those addicts and stuff and drug dealers, going to treatment with them and stuff. And I remember when I was getting ready to get to graduate from treatment and a drug test every day, and a drug test every day. And I was afraid to be let back out into public. And I went and asked them, can I take the treatment over again? And you know what they did? My counselor, she went in her office and she gave me a meeting schedule to Narcotics Anonymous for the Tampa Funk Coast area. Says, Judy, this is what you need to do. You need to get to a meeting. You need to find a home group. You need to get a sponsor. And she, you know, she told me everything that in 90 meetings in 90 days and stuff. So in September of 1998, I walked into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I haven't had to go anywhere else. And I found my home group there. I never forget my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I walked in, there were 125 addicts in the room, and stacked up, there were chairs every place and stuff. And I was so you know, nervous. Here I was an addict that ran the streets and did all this crazy junk, but I was frightened of Narcotics Anonymous members at first. And so if I remember that first meeting and stuff, I got to get up and get all the key tags up to 6 months, because I was, you know, 6 months clean. But it took me a long time to get used to you all. And I was so frightful, because see, in active addiction, we never let anybody get behind us on a street, because somebody got behind you, it might have meant they were gonna try and rob you, take your dope or whatever. And so for a while, I would have to sit with my back up against the wall, because I didn't want nobody sitting behind me, because you know I'm still you know reeling from the street stuff, you know. And the first time they asked me to chair a meeting, I rearranged the whole room so nobody would be sitting behind me to chair a meeting. Now that sounds really crazy, but that's how it is for some of us when we first get here. We can't rush the newcomer. We have to let them know that it's okay for us to get a hug and stuff. And that's how my recovery started and stuff, you know. And my first service commitments was just helping my sponsor. I got a sponsor, and her and all of her sponsees took me to meetings every night. And there, they encouraged me to help stack up the chairs, help clean up stuff and stuff, you know, and bathrooms and whatever. And that's what they encouraged me to do. And they took me every night to meetings, and they set some boundaries with me about, we don't want to hear, you know, don't, you're in recovery now. We don't want to hear about any war stories and stuff. And they taught me how amazing it was to give back, because my service that I was taught to do, it helped me to stay clean, and I got to help other addicts have a place to sit, to have a cup of coffee, to read the literature. And that's how my service started. Then my sponsor told me, says, Judy, you're disabled, and says, you just sit at home all day. I think you would make an excellent helpline volunteer. So she gave me the book. She gave me her book, the guidelines and policy. I memorized that stuff, and she dropped me off at my first helpline meeting, and they were so desperate for help. I came away with a pager and two shifts my first helpline meeting. The second meeting I went to, they gave me the workshop that I had already memorized. The third meeting I went to, I gave the workshop to the new helpline volunteers. I served on every service position on our helpline. I was chair for 1 year, pager coordinator. I changed the meeting informations on the phone. I mean, and they gave me talents. Look at all the stuff they taught me how to do. and stuff. And I was a helpline volunteer for almost the first 5 years of my recovery. And it, and it, then they changed to cell phones. I was a pager kind of an addict. And they turned to cell phones, and my mother's roof is like so, it's an old house. The signal, and if I wanted to stay on the helpline, I'd have to go outside and sit in the yard to answer the call. So I, unfortunately, I had to go. I had to go ahead and rotate out. And the woman that became the helpline chair, she and I used to fuss all the time and stuff, and she used to be throw stuff at me during our meetings and stuff. And a member of my area who lived a couple blocks away, his mother and my mother were good friends. They used to talk on the phone about their children being in the service and all that stuff, you know, mothers do at times. He was killed on a motorcycle accident, and he had the pager on him. His family brought me the pager. And I went to his memorial service, and I saw this woman there. And because, let me tell you, this how this program works, because this woman went and told her sponsor, I you know, complained about me being a difficult person to her sponsor. Her sponsor told her, well, why don't you pray for her for 10 days? She said, I don't want to pray for her. I don't like her. Her sponsor told her, pray for her anyhow. And we became friends because, let me tell you how those prayers work. She'd had a fight with her husband. She called me on the phone. She was driving down the country road 100 miles an hour with the lights off, trying to commit suicide. And I was able to talk her out. I was able to talk her into pulling over and sitting there and letting me talk to her on the phone. And her prayers worked. You see, I was the difficult person. It wasn't her. You know, I was the difficult person. And her prayers helped me, so I was in turn able to help save her own life. And this program is amazing and stuff, you know. And I rejoined the helpline again to help her with the committee and answer the phone and all of that stuff. And from there and stuff, when I went to Region, I had to go to Region a couple of times. I didn't like having to ride the Greyhound bus across Florida, but that's how it goes. I met this amazing person, a member of my fellowship and stuff. And me and him, we're best friends. We've been friends for 21 years now. He was our, he got elected as our PI chair. And he asked me, Judy, I want you to come go with me because I know how proficient you are with the web stuff. And when I became a member of the PI committee for the Tampa Fun Coast area, I ran the area's website. They trained me. I kept our meeting schedules updated. And I learned how to do the NAWS database from my area. So any addict coming in my area, if you're looking for a meeting, everything was correct because a lot of areas don't keep the meeting schedules updated on the NAWS database, where most people go to NA.org to find meetings and stuff, you know. And I had helpline learning days, helpline and PI. We had dances. We did presentations. We went into facilities with H&I and let people know what Narcotics Anonymous is and what it's not, informing the public and stuff. And we went as a joint, like a joint presentation with two different committees and stuff, the facilities. We hang posters up, helpline posters up on, they have helpline poster hanging day, PI and helpline. We'd get together and go hang posters all over Tampa and stuff. And I have had an amazing, amazing time of service in Narcotics Anonymous. Area service every week. Even I'm disabled. I've been sick since the day I got clean. I'm a disabled addict, and a lot of this stuff, sitting at area service for 4 and 5 hours, really did me in. And I was also, my mother started getting sick, and I became her caregiver. So it was in 2010, I had to leave service. Structured service here in Narcotics, but since when I first got online, say in 2000, 2001, I put Narcotics Anonymous into my search engine, and I came across this NA group, Earth Group NA. It was one of the biggest groups back then. I was the group's very first online meeting coordinator, And we used to have 32 meetings a week in a text-based chat room. Let me tell you, the technology today is amazing stuff, you know. And we had all these meetings, and as things goes on, things change after a while, you know. And people didn't want to show up for their service commitments. Well, I'm sure you all know how that is. And sometimes it started getting overwhelming because some days I ended up chairing four meetings a day. And we were the very first to ever have a New Year's Eve marathon meeting. We had an 18-hour New Year's Eve marathon meeting. Stuff, you know, myself and two other addicts did all the service for this meeting and stuff. And I remember like it was yesterday and stuff, you know. At that time, I know I'm jumping around a lot. I haven't had very much sleep and stuff, you know. So at that time and stuff, my sponsor was an online sponsor because after my first sponsor, I had to get a new sponsor because she told me she didn't take new company, she didn't take sponsees through step work. I said, well, damn, they told me I needed to do some step work here. So I got another sponsor and stuff. And when she dropped me for the boyfriend that came in her life, I was the sponsee without a car because I was still on probation and stuff, and I hadn't gotten off probation yet. So I asked every woman in my local fellowship, and they told me no. I said, I can't understand. Why can't I get a sponsor? So when I found Earth Group NA, the web servant and his one of his sponsees, well, the web servant told me, Judy, I'll help you. I'll be your sponsor. He's an old timer. And people tell me, oh, you got a man for a sponsor? I said, yeah. So what? He lives in Alaska. I'm in Tampa. I mean, like, we're not going to meet on the corner to have sex anytime soon. You know, a lot of people, you know, say, you know, women work with women, which is preferable, and men work with men. But in my case, I wanted to work the steps desperately and stuff. And he took me through the steps and the traditions at 2.5 years clean. I had a working knowledge of the traditions. I read a post from him on an internet forum talking about I was his first sponsee in 14 years that actually wanted to work the steps and the traditions stuff. And he taught me so much about service and giving back and all of this stuff, you know. And I've only had two face-to-face sponsors in my whole 23 years of Narcotics Anonymous recovery. A lot of people can't believe that, but that's just how it is if you can't get a sponsor again face to face, and if you want what this program has to offer, you've got to be willing to do whatever it takes, even if it means getting an online sponsor. My sponsor currently today is an online. Been my sponsor for 9 years now. And so if I couldn't ask for a better sponsor, and I still want what she has to offer and stuff. But flash forward back to Earth Group. After Earth Group started, we lost our big website and went to like a forum type thing. And the website was just like, and just the group fell apart. But, you know, we had thousands of members, and I was just so impressed with how they had it set up where I was the congratulator for one, which I sent out birthday cards to all of our members. And it was amazing how those pages just updated every day with the anniversaries and the forum. And, you know, I was so grateful. I did every service position at that group: secretary, treasurer, online meeting coordinator, e-sponsor coordinator. I was the birthday person. I was the group coordinator for a while and stuff. And finally, the group fell apart. Today, we're just a Facebook group. But, you know, that's how it goes sometimes, those early groups and stuff. Flash forward, I started going around the internet. I did service for NARecovery.org before they closed up. I was an admin on their forum. I helped with the, they had the, that was the days of the Merck chat rooms. I did service in there. And from there, I was going to group, and I finally came across, this is where I met Steve, to UKNA.org. I remember I wanted to do service there. I asked him about being service. Back then, there wasn't even a committee. There was the web servant and me and one other member. And we ran the whole website. We did the moderator. And before I was able to do service for that group, they had me post. I had to post 400 times on the forum. They wanted to see what I was about. They wanted to see what my recovery was about. Was I going to reach out to newcomers and stuff like that? And so from that time on, I was a member of the UTNA website committee online 13 years. And I brought the concept of online meetings to UTNA.org. Back then, we had some old crappy chat room that the web servant, my God, if you didn't continuously type, the thing would boot you out the door, and from there we got a Sigma chat room. Our web servant purchased the first chat room out of his own pocket and stuff. And I said, well, you know, in NA, we're not supposed to pay for everything ourselves. So I was able to send him some money and stuff to help pay for that. And we had an amazing web servant. We had an amazing website. That's where I met Steve. He just popped in one day. You know, he lived on this little island and stuff. There was no Narcotics Anonymous. And we ended up doing service together. We trained him how to chair meetings and how to do all this stuff. And our web servant made us all these little amazing smileys that meant so much, like higher power at work and little NA symbols and key tags. We were able to give out key tags to our members. And it was an amazing part of my life. I miss it. I know I can never go back to that, you know. And then from there, after technology started improving and stuff, we went from there to, I believe it was to Skype, which for Skype doesn't allow you to have more than about 18 people. From there, they went to Mega Meeting, the part of that. And from there, we went to the current format they use now, which is GoToMeeting. And I just could not get it figured out in my mind how to work that and stuff. And I started having some problems with the chair of the online meeting committee and stuff. She would do things. She started bullying me and stuff. And where I would lose my, you know, tell me, oh, your greeter and stuff doesn't want to do service for you anymore. When in reality, he wanted to go back to face-to-face meetings on Friday nights, stuff, you know. And she would do, and I would always get upset. And then I'd get upset when I found out the truth. So I just made a decision after talking to my sponsor that it was time for me to rotate out. But I had been there, a member of the website committee, for 13 years. That's a long time to do service on one subcommittee. But I loved it so much. It was every day. To me, it was frontline service. And that's the only kind of service I like. From there, I said, well, I'm without a service position. I got another service position within 2 weeks, which is at a group and stuff that I just recently resigned from because of all the, I can't do a lot of chaos and drama in my do it and stuff. And I served there for 3 years. I was a vice business chair. I was an admin, a tech admin, which means I had to sit in 3 meetings a week. And if the chair had a problem, I'd have to go up and continue the meeting. And I chaired a meeting a week there. And I chaired meetings there for 3 years until the drama and stuff was just to the point where the traditions were violated continuously, and I cannot serve a Narcotics Anonymous group that violates the traditions, because the traditions are the guidelines that keeps our fellowship alive and free. Stuff, you know. So I stepped down, and I tell you what, I've the only person that's reached out to me from that group is a newcomer, begging me to come back to the meetings over there and stuff, I have no intentions on going back. And then, you know, I've heard that they're being met on hard times right now. And I'm sorry, but you know, if you don't treat your members like we treat each other with love, compassion, and empathy and stuff, they're not going to stay around. They just will not stay around for hate, meanness, favoritism, clicks. I've been through all of that stuff. It's taxing on somebody's soul. And the group I'm currently at now is called Live the NA Steps. And most half of the members are former trusted servants from the NA Live group. And they asked me over a year ago, would I be willing? And I came in at the bottom level. I'm part of the admin team. I'm the website moderator for our forum on the website. I'm the admin for our Facebook group, and I chair right now. I'm not supposed to be chairing more than 2 meetings a week, but I'm chairing 3 meetings a week. I co-chair about four meetings while I'm sitting here disabled. And these people, they helped me because a year ago, it's going to be a year ago Monday, my mother died 3 days after my clean date last year. And I knew it was coming because she was under hospice care. Stuff. But it was the most hardest time of my entire time in Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, I've gone through a lot of life. Friends dying, you know, that's one thing I learned as a newcomer because my sponsor told me, Judy, you cannot have any reservations. And I said, well, if my dog dies, she goes, your dog is going to die. Your cat's going to die. Your best friend's going to die. We're all going to die. You cannot have a reservation if somebody dies in your life. You've got to stay clean through the hard shit as well as the easy stuff. And I was with my mother the last night of her life. I was with my mother when she took her last breath. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to get through in my life. I actually had thought about committing suicide because my mom had been a part of my mom's life for 22 years. She had me clean in her life. I went from a junkie to a grateful recovering addict who she changed her will for. She left me in charge of her finances. She taught me how to be a human again. She taught me about food safety. I used to eat out of dumpsters. I used to eat week-old sandwiches from 7-Eleven and where the meat would be green and disgusting because I was hungry and because I'd used all my money. That's the kind of stuff I stooped down to. And she had been my best friend for 22 years. She was part of my recovery. She took me to meetings and everything. She took me to my house. I mean, she did so much for me and stuff, you know. And I was able, back then, before she entrusted me with all of her finances, I had access to all of her credit cards, QVC, Home Shop, and bank accounts. She'd get signed checks from me to write the bills out to. I took care of everything around here. I was her caregiver for 15 years. I did everything, and she did so much for me as well and stuff, you know. And I was devastated when she died. But I didn't have to pick up no matter what and stuff. And I'll never forget and stuff. And we had her funeral and stuff. Now, Monday is a year since she died. This has been the hardest year of my life in staying clean and recovery. But I have held on by my fingertips sometimes to this program. And after she passed away, I jumped into the middle of a lifeboat, as we call it, and stuff. I was working a step three at that time. My sponsor was not happy. I did it three times. My sponsor said, this is not good enough. And I had to do it a fourth time. And I worked on my step three for the fourth time during what in the early times of my mother's death. And she had me read every page of our literature on fear and faith. And on step three, I had to read out of every book, including the step working guide. There, and you know, and I really applied myself. I got in the middle of a lifeboat. I'm an online Narcotics Anonymous sponsor. And back then, I had about eight sponsees, and I was doing a lot of service. I was serving two groups at the same time because I know I needed you all. I had to be with my fellowship so I could stay clean through all of this stuff, you know. And I remember when my mom first passed away that I really had thought about committing suicide because I didn't want to live anymore without my mother. I was just so devastated and stuff, you know. And was devastated and stuff. And my home group members, they let me sit in meetings and cry, and they supported me, and they helped me through to the other side of wanting to commit suicide after my mother died. I can never repay them for what they did for me and stuff, you know. And they tried to give me a week off from service commitment. I said, I can't. I can't do that. I can't be sitting here by myself in this house, twiddling my thumbs, you know, and thinking about that stuff. And I said, no, I need to be here and stuff. And on the night that the day that my mother died, I had out of town friends come, and they took me out to dinner and all that stuff. And because they didn't want me to be by myself the day of my mother's death. and stuff. And I just threw myself into Narcotics Anonymous service and my step work. And I have all these, I only have three sponsees now. I have three amazing sponsees that are staying clean. They've never been to a face-to-face meeting because of COVID. And staying clean, they do their step work, that some of them do service. I have them all, I told them how important it was for them to reach out to help other addicts that are crying in meetings, the women and stuff. So they reach out, they help other women and stuff. They're a very, very huge part of my recovery. And I'm currently on my step four, and this is like my eighth step four. And it's really strange and stuff. I remember my first step four. My God, it took, I had to find a fill-in sponsor. It took 3 days at 4 hours a day to hear my first four step. This four step, I've got like maybe two resentments, one fear, one secret, and a little bit more on the relationship part. I'm working on the assets right now, stuff, and I have applied myself in my recovery and stuff. And it's in every in my recovery. A lot of people say, "Oh, I can't do this because I'm busy." And I was taught, whatever you put in front of your recovery, you're gonna lose it. NA is not just part of my life, it's my whole life. Because this program saved my life. And I can never, ever repay Narcotics Anonymous for what they did for me. And all it started out with was 5 minutes staying clean. I'm gonna let you guys know, if I can do this and stay clean, I got clean, I stayed clean, I'm in the middle of the lifeboat. Any addict can do this. Anybody can do this. I have seen people that I did that were home group members. I had a home group member once who was certified mentally challenged. He had all, he was OCD, he had all these major mental health issues. That man has the same amount of clean time as I do. He does service. He does help on. He sponsors other addicts, and he goes to meetings up to three times a day. And and he taught me how to put up with people. He taught me how to tolerate people because he has a sexual addiction. And he used to call me on the phone and ask me what color underwear did big fat women wear and stuff like that. And I said, that's very, very inappropriate. But he taught me how to tolerate and people that weren't like me and stuff, And at the end, I found myself protecting him more than once against ruthless, judgmental addicts and stuff, But I am so very grateful to this program. I'm grateful to my virtual home group, Live the NA Steps. They let me be who I am and stuff. And I'm grateful to Steve and you guys and stuff. I really, really am grateful that you all asked me to share my story today and stuff. And this is a Just for Today program. That was my anniversary yesterday. But all of us in the meeting tonight, we all have the same amount of time just for today. I don't know if I've shared enough, if I've shared long enough and stuff, and I'll let you guys know the program still works. When I love the newcomers. When I hear the newcomers share, it lets me know it's just as bad out there as it was when I got here, letting me know that I don't ever have to use again. I don't ever have to use again, even if I want to use again. I don't have to use again. Newcomers, there is hope after dope. And this is where I found it, here in this program. And whether or not you're allowed to go to a face-to-face meeting or not, be grateful that these online NAA meetings are here for you because they helped me save my life. I'm able to reach out and help addicts. I've started going to a new group. For me, the meetings start at midnight. And last night I stayed up till 4:30 in the morning chatting with addicts from the UK and from all over the United States and stuff, And they made me feel a part of and welcomed me. And I really love it because their clean time requirements are like they've given a newcomers an opportunity to be of service at one day clean. And to me, that's very, very attractive. That is very, very attractive. If I wasn't already so committed to my home group, I would love to do service at that group as well. Who knows? We never know what's going to happen on down the road. But I want to thank you guys so much for inviting me to come along and speak to you all tonight. I hope you can understand, could have understood my accent. But and Steve, let me tell you how Steve and I at one time, we fell out for a while and stuff. I'll never forget, Steve, when you went and posted that at Decades Clean. Oh my God, it was like a mob. And we learned how, because of this program. I've met Steve more than once and hugged his neck more than once here in Florida at our big service symposium. And this program taught me and Steve how to make amends to each other and allow each other and stuff in our lives. And now we're very good friends. And that's how this program works. You can take somebody that you don't like in Narcotics Anonymous, but there's a lot of people out there that are judgmental and stuff. And I'm not that addict. And I'm so grateful, Steve, that you and I made amends to each other and stuff for how I acted and how and stuff. And I'm so grateful that I got to meet Jay at two. I got to hug his neck and stuff. And it's been an amazing journey. And I'm looking forward to what's next this week. I'm getting ready to join. I'm going to be part of I heard back from I guess the chair of this committee that I guess she's been in contact. Well, in 2019, she was in a contact with the Additional Needs Committee here in Florida, and so via the Service Symposium, they have welcomed me to their work group. They are looking to establish guidelines to make meetings more accessible to the disabled addicts in the Ontario region of Canada. And I'm so grateful. They have made me feel welcome. I'm going to start. I'm joining this week because I miss doing PI and stuff. And I miss doing service like that. But this online NA video meetings, online meetings in general, that's my passion because I get to sit here and welcome people. And everybody tells me I make them feel so welcomed and loved and cared about. And that's what I do. I'm not a mean, nasty person and stuff. I'm nothing like the person I was 23 years ago in active addiction. So I want to thank you guys so much for inviting me to speak. I love you all, and thank you so much for being a part of my. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.